Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. I'm Jake, always with Matt in Utah. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty great. Today is a big day for me. It's International Tolkien Reading Day, so I read the last chapter of The Hobbit earlier this morning. I'm going to read Mythopoeia later tonight, some other things. So good day for me.
Yeah, exciting day. All of us know what Mythopoeia is, so really glad you're going to read that.
One of the most underrated poems that has ever been written. It's very good. But anywho.
So check that out, listeners. Today is also the last day of the Elite Eight. Duke is currently playing Kansas. We're going to talk about NFL free agency today, but just quick update on the Final Four. The earlier game, Villanova beat Texas Tech. Loyola,
thank you very much.
Loyola Chicago beat Kansas State, so they're in the Final Four, and then Michigan beat Florida State. So we got Loyola Chicago, Michigan, Villanova, and either Duke or Kansas going to the Final Four.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm pretty excited. If you listen to the show, I don't know if it was last week or a couple of weeks ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago because we were picking our upsets and who we thought was going to go far. And I had Loyola Chicago in the Elite Eight, so I'm pretty excited about them. You know, had I known that they were going to be playing Kansas State instead of Virginia, then I would have put them in the Final Four, and that would have been cool to call. But yeah, it's been exciting. It's weird how the left side of the bracket is like really, really crazy, and then you look at the right side of the bracket, and the Elite Eight's a 1 and a 3, and then a 1 and a 2. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's weird how that worked out, for sure. How, like, the left bracket just completely messed up, then the right side's just kind of chalk, I guess, or normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, Matt, let's talk about – so free agency has been going for on a couple weeks now in the NFL. There's a lot of deals that went down. We're only going to talk about a few of the biggest ones, some winners. Matt, what did you think about Kirk Cousins signing with the Minnesota Vikings?
I guess I'm confused. And the reason that I'm confused is, like, I definitely think that Kirk Cousins is in the top, I don't know, 20, top half of NFL quarterbacks. You probably know where he falls better than I do. I'm just not completely convinced that he's, I don't know, what, like, $7-8 million a year better than Case Keenum is, particularly because you know that Case Keenum works well in your system, and you don't know that Kirk Cousins is going to work well in your system. So I think that was really risky, and I don't know if it needed to be as risky as it was. So it wasn't a deal that I understood. It wasn't the worst deal of the offseason, obviously, but.
Yeah, I am not anti Case Keenum as a person, but I honestly think last year was kind of a fluke. So Case Keenum, after the Vikings signed with the Denver Broncos, I don't think that precludes Denver from drafting a quarterback. I don't think Case Keenum's the answer. I think we have enough history of Case Keenum showing that he's not as good as he was this year. So I think for the Vikings, a team where the rest of their roster is – Super Bowl ready. I think the Vikings, the Eagles, and the Jaguars have top to bottom the three, not including quarterback, three best rosters in the NFL. So yeah. I think for them to take that next step, getting a guy like Cousins, even though it is a risk, like you said, and it's a risk they needed to take because they're not going to be this good for very long just because it's impossible for continuity in the NFL because there's lots of deals coming up for them. So, like, contracts, like Stephon Diggs is going to get a new contract. So, salary cap-wise, they're going to have to let some people go. So, signing Kirk Cousins, even though it is a risk and it's going to give them a year or two window to get to that Super Bowl, I think it was something they had to do because Kirk Cousins, I do think, is better than Case Keenum.
Okay. That makes sense. Do you think he's worth, like, that much money more, or do you just think that the Vikings roster is already good enough that the quarterback was really the only thing that they were missing?
I think the quarterback, In terms of missing, I think they can still, like, the offensive line isn't as good as it could be, and their running back, Dalvin Cook, is coming off of that ACL tear, I believe. So there are definitely some, not everything is set on offense, but their receiving core, they got Kyle Rudolph, who's a tight end, who's one of the top 10 or so tight ends in the league. And then between Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, they do have one of the top two duos. I'd have to, I kind of think off the top of my head, they're the best duo, especially in Oakland. You could say Jordy Nelson now and Amari Cooper are better. So off the top of my head, I kind of think, though, just Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen are at least one of the top three receiving duos in the league. Their defense is solid. They added Sheldon Richardson from Seattle to play defensive line. They have one of the best corners in the league in Xavier Rhodes, and then Harrison Smith is a safety. They got a couple stud linebackers, including Anthony Barr, who played at UCLA a few years ago. Yeah. So honestly, like, their quarterback, even though Case Keenum was good, they didn't want it to be like a Denver Broncos situation. What the year what they won the Super Bowl, where Peyton Manning was like just on the team. Kirk Cousins gives them someone who can like help the offense instead of just like not screwing it up, which Case Keenum did more than that last year. But even though you're overpaying for Cousins, you're also overpaying for the shot at a championship. So it's hopefully going to be worth it for them in the long run.
Yeah. I don't know, though. I mean, I just think that a year and winning a playoff game, obviously the game against the Eagles didn't go well, is enough of a sample size where you can feel like, okay, this quarterback is going to do well in our system. And I don't, you know, necessarily think it's going to be like what happened with Nick Foles, where he had that really good system and then Chip Kelly got rid of all the good players. Like, that's not going to happen. So that's the reason I thought it was weird. I do agree with you, though, is that I think I'm a little bit worried about Case Keenum going into Denver just because it is going to be a different system. And he's done bad on every team except the Vikings, so I'm not convinced that he's going to be able to do well in Denver.
Yeah, well, and a couple of things, too. So the Vikings are getting a new offensive coordinator, so the system might be similar, but it's not going to be with Pat Shurmur, who was the offensive coordinator before.
So, okay, that makes sense, yeah.
And also, Case Keenum is one non-missed tackle away from losing that playoff game. So, I mean, this is a conversation change if Marcus Williams makes that tackle and the Vikings don't get that miracle against New Orleans.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he did keep him in there. So, I mean, you played well, which I guess was all I was trying to say. You know who I bet is mad about this Kirk Cousins thing, though, is the Packers. Because, A, hypothetically, the Vikings should be a lot better. But, B, is they are going to have to give Aaron Rodgers so much money now.
Oh, I have no idea what the Packers are going to do, honestly.
Right? Like, if Kirk Cousins is making, I think he's averaging 26 or 27 million per year, right? They're going to have to give Aaron Rodgers so much money.
Yeah, like Jimmy Garoppolo, he's averaging 27 million. I believe he's the only one below Cousins in terms of value. So of those two, like Cousins, who's played, who has zero playoffs win, and Jimmy Garoppolo has seven starts, I think, in his career, are getting 27 million. I literally cannot think what the Packers are going to have to pay Aaron Rodgers. Can't fathom. Like,
that's going to be crazy.
Yeah, the Packers, they've really screwed that roster up with Aaron Rodgers. They didn't make a ton of moves. I didn't like them releasing Jordy Nelson because I think Jordy Nelson is one of the top. He's in that second tier, I think. So the first tier receivers is Odell Beckham Jr., Antonio Brown, and then Julio Jones. No order there. But I think the second tier of receivers, which is still really good, I think Jordy Nelson's right up there with the best in the league.
Yeah, I think so.
So I do not know what the Packers were doing, and they're going to be – we'll see what happens with them, man. They're going to have to pay somebody like Rodgers a lot of money. We'll see how the rest of the team, they can build around it with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then another Case Keenum to the Broncos. Again, I just don't – I think that's the deal. It's a two-year deal, I believe. It's backloaded. I think that's just a bridge situation where they're going to – like Case Keenum can play. And I think John Elway is still trying to develop either Paxton Lynch, his first-round pick from a couple years ago, I still think drafting a Josh Allen or a Josh Rosen in the draft is a real shot for him too. Where if they're picking that high, they might as well take a shot on one of those quarterbacks.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they do, because – and he is 30 right now. So let me – I've got the salary in front of me. It's $8 million for 2018 and then $18 million for 2019. Do you think they just cut him in 2019?
Yeah, cut him or trade him. Like, I think Denver's hoping that he has a really good year and then they can either Paxton Lynch again, or if they draft a quarterback, develops into someone they can play, and then they can trade him for whatever in 2019.
Yeah.
And part of the reason also they might have done that is because they are salary cap strapped, so they might have just not had enough flexibility to put about like most of the money up front. They might have had to backload it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And then I'm just going over this, man. Another team that I think lost a lot is the New England Patriots.
That doesn't sound good. What did they lose?
So, I mean, this was known, but they lost Malcolm Butler. He left to go to Tennessee Titans. That ever since the Super Bowl, even before the Super Bowl, we kind of knew he was going to leave. He was the subject of a lot of trade dispute. They lost their running back, Deion Lewis, to the Titans as well. They lost their left tackle, Nate Solder, to the New York Giants.
Yeah.
And they didn't really bring in anybody. They brought in Jeremy Hill, who was a running back in Cincinnati. Kind of lost his job this year to that rookie Joe Mixon out of Oklahoma. They re-signed Rex Burkhead, who also is from Cincinnati. Like, a lot of these guys I'm looking at that they signed were, like, just backup running backs in Cincinnati and offensive linemen I've never heard of before. And I know I haven't heard of every offensive lineman, but I still know who a lot of them are.
You do know who a lot of them are. And so that, you know, for the Patriots, that just, you know, that's kind of what they do, is they bring in a bunch of people that you've never heard of, and they kind of make it work.
Yeah.
Like Burkhead, I had never heard, and he was in the first half, had a couple of really good catches against the Eagles in the Super Bowl. So it's odd, though, that they haven't tried to fix their defense, because I think, you know, unless Tom Brady falls off a cliff, that offense is going to still be able to give you enough no matter what. But do you think that – has there been any fix to the defense? Obviously, they're going to get a new defensive coordinator. Is there any reason to believe that's going to be better than it was this year?
No. Right now, no. Honestly.
Well, that's good for the rest of us.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was trying to think of a more eloquent way to say it, but – I don't think there is. They're definitely – because the interesting thing is, too, is like right now their backup quarterback is Brian Hoyer. So they're one of those teams who you would think maybe at the end of the first round, if someone like Lamar Jackson or Mason Rudolph is available, they could take. But I think they have to take a rookie defensive player, someone who can contribute right away, and then get a quarterback in the third or fourth round, like a Kyle LaLeta out of Richmond or something like that, one of the later prospects.
I will say Mason Rudolph, I don't know how much longer Bill Belichick is going to stick around, but just him developing under Tom Brady, the thought of that is very scary.
Oh, dude, Mason, I would be ecstatic for him if he got to go to New England.
Yeah.
That'd be sweet. But, yeah, the defense, I don't think – and, again, it's the Patriots. Another person they lost is Danny Amendola, their receiver.
Where'd he go?
Will hopefully be back for them. So that probably won't be a huge loss. And again, everyone who leaves New England, I feel like, isn't as successful as they were while they were there.
Yeah.
But so I think that's a bad deal for both Danny Amendola and the Patriots. So it'll be really interesting to see who, like, what other moves the Patriots bring in, what they do in the draft and everything like that. If they maybe trade out of the first round, get some more picks, or they all, you know, Bill Belichick, that's the thing with the Patriots. It's like San Antonio. It's hard to question what they're doing just because they're always on top of it. So,
right. That's true. Where did you say Danny Amendola was going?
The Miami Dolphins.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so he's going to, again, not as good, but he's probably going to fill that Jarvis Landry role that they have. And then a guy named Devontae Parker, who's I believe this will be his third year out of the University of Louisville. Bill, Miami's hoping he can take that next step and be a true number one receiver. He's flash potential. He's been hurt. His rookie year, he was hurt a little bit. But he's extremely talented. So if he does stay healthy, I think Devontae Parker can be number one. So Danny Amendola won't have to do too much because, again, he's not a number one receiver.
Yes. Yeah, and he's not going to have Tom Brady thrown to him, so that's going to be tricky.
Yeah.
Cool. Can we talk about Nick Foles for a sec?
Absolutely.
So here's my thing. Like, I hear people arguing about whether they should trade him or whether they should keep him. And I don't really think that's a right discussion at all. Because obviously, if you get a good enough trade for him, if you get enough back, then you do that. And then if you don't get enough back, then you're going to keep him for a year. It's great to have him as a backup quarterback. So my question is, what do you think he's worth? Because was it, I think we got the Eagles got a first and a fourth for Sam Bradford. And, like, is he better than that? Because, I mean, draft picks, I think, is probably what the Eagles want to try to go with, or that's what it has sounded like they want to try and go with. So I was just curious on what, if you were the Eagles general manager, what it would take to get Nick Foles away.
Yeah, I think the Eagles are going to sell it as Super Bowl MVP, which is Sam Bradford is not. I would look at it more as Jimmy Garoppolo got traded for a second-round pick from the Patriots to the 49ers, and that's as a backup quarterback with a lot of potential deal.
Yeah.
That's what other teams are going to say. It's like he's just a backup. While he won the Super Bowl, he only won 4 or 5 games in total for you guys. So the people who are saying, like, oh, he's super valuable, you don't need a franchise quarterback. Like Carson Wentz went 11-2. And they wouldn't have been the number one seed with Nick Foles the whole season. So the idea that you can just win with whoever isn't true. So I think the Eagles aren't going to trade him because they're going to want at least a first round, probably another pick, like you said, a fourth, maybe like a third or something, or like 2 second-rounders or something like that. And other teams are going to say he had a really good season in 2013. He played 3 out of 5 good games this year. One of them happened to be the Super Bowl. But he's still not in that top 15 of starting quarterbacks, most likely, or like right on the edge of that if he is a starter. Because the question is, he's been so volatile in his career, you don't know which Nick Foles you're going to get. So I don't think he gets traded because other teams are going to look at like second or third round, kind of like a Jimmy Garoppolo situation, even though Jimmy Garoppolo is less had less starts but had a lot more potential, less known, I guess, of a product.
Yeah,
the Eagles are going to say, now, what?
I was going to say, now I will say the Browns, and I know they're a dumb organization, but were they going to do a first and a third for whoever Cincinnati's backup is, that Alabama McCarron?
Yeah, so they were going to do a second. I don't think it was a first. I can pull up the trade details.
It was like a second and a third. Like it was whatever Garoppolo's pick was. And another pick. So
it was, I believe, a second and a third. They also had a second and a third for Garoppolo offered. So
okay, yeah. So do you think that there's going to be a team like the Browns that would maybe be dumb enough? Do you think that would happen, or do you think it would take like? Obviously, I don't want this to happen, but something like Patrick Mahomes gets hurt in training camp, and then the Chiefs literally have nobody, and then they need to do what the Vikings did with Sam Bradford.
I think that's a more likely situation. I also think it'll depend on who the Eagles sign as their third-string quarterback. If they, let's say they draft someone in like the fourth or fifth round, and they think highly of them, to be the backup to Carson Wentz, and like an injury does happen in training camp, they would be more willing to part with that while still having the high price. But if their two quarterbacks are, if their quarterbacks are Carson Wentz, Nick Foles, and like I know this isn't he's on the Saints, but like Tom Savage or something like that, someone who you can't win with, then I don't think they'd trade Nick Foles. I think they'd have to A, get a right price, and B, have someone behind Nick Foles who they think they can at least win a few games with.
Right.
Because they're in the same situation as the Vikings where this roster isn't going to be together forever. Like we're seeing what's happening in Seattle right now, is just the roster's falling apart. You only have a certain window to win, and the Eagles are going to have to pay a lot of people. Like, they just got Michael Bennett on their team. They've been trading. Part of the Torrey Smith reason they traded him was for cap reasons, just because they couldn't pay everybody. And they got two or three more years before Carson Wentz's rookie deal is up, and they're going to pay him $25, $30 million a year. So I think the only reason Nick Foles gets traded is if, like you said, there's an injury and there's a third stringer who can move up to that second string spot.
That's cool. Now, you mentioned, just while you mentioned Seattle, and I know we're probably done with this topic in a sec, but how do you feel about Richard Sherman coming to your team off an Achilles injury?
You know, my intellectually, I feel like it's a good deal because it's incentive-based. His base salary is only $5 million. He can earn up to $13 million if he's all pro. So he's not a huge risk financially for us. He's a really good – he has the same fit scheme. Our 49ers defensive coordinator, Robert – I think his name's Saley is how I pronounce it in my head. He was a coach. So the 49ers run the same defensive scheme as the Seahawks. Our cornerbacks are really young. We let Dante Johnson walk in free agency. So our starter, opposite Richard Sherman, is going to be Akella Witherspoon, who third-round pick out of Colorado. So it'll be nice to have a veteran there. Corden was the biggest position of need for the 49ers in the offseason, so it makes sense, everything that they're doing. The biggest reason, again, is because it's incentive-based. There's not a ton of guaranteed money involved.
Yeah, those contracts, man, I mean, those are great for the teams, but those suck for the players.
Yeah, especially if you get hurt, you're just screwed.
Right.
So, like, Richard Sherman, like, he's a confident guy, so he signed that. He wanted incentive-based contract. Like, obviously, he wants as much guaranteed money as he can get, but he understood he was coming off an Achilles tear, and he's 30, so in discussions with John Lynch, the Niners general manager, he understood, like, that was one of the things he'd have to give up, and he believes he can prove it and get back to that level. And
yeah.
I hope he can, because, like, if he's worth that much, then we should pay him for it, and it won't be a waste of money. In my heart, I still can't fathom Sherman as a 49ers fan. I just – there's so many images of him just trashing the 49ers, their fans, the organization. It's just really hard for me to forget that. It's like when Pablo Sandoval signed with the Giants again. It's like I feel like the 49ers are – and the Giants, if we're talking about this, are such proud organizations that they should get people who want to be there and, like, don't disrespect the team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's how I feel in my heart. But intellectually, I do think it's a good signing, especially because the 49ers had a trade in place to trade Aqib Talib. And Talib, he basically said, I just don't feel comfortable being traded. So the, even though, like, the Broncos and the Niners agreed to that, they backed off it because Talib wasn't comfortable with it, which isn't something that happens a whole lot in the NFL. So after that, Richard Sherman became available. So it worked out well for the 49ers. So we'll have to see how it plays out on the field. But right now
– yeah, it's going to look weird seeing him in that jersey. But
it's going to be really weird, man. I am happy that he's not in Seattle, though, because Seahawks fans aren't my favorite people in the world. I was hoping to go to, like, Cleveland or something, but at least he's not in Seattle.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's kind of how I felt about DeMarco Murray, like, even when it wasn't working well. I was like, well, at least he's not playing for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
And then they signed – were bad enough that they signed Ezekiel Elliott, so that, you know, blew up in our faces. But they're still the Cowboys, so I'm not too concerned.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll be see. I think the Niners, I think they only had a few signings, but they did really well. I think the Buffalo Bills had a really good free agent signing. I think the Oakland Raiders are another team that had some really good signings. The Chargers, I think, did really well in free agency. The Rams were more trades, but they really bolstered with Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters, their cornerback.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting. A lot of, like, really good players switch teams this year. So it'll be interesting to see the development of how that plays out in the NFL, especially affecting the draft, which next week you should listen. We're going to talk about my mock draft that came out 2.0 post-free agency. So
I like how the Browns were probably the busiest team, or, like, the most noticeably busy team with trades and draft picks and everything, but we just, or I still don't take them seriously enough to really discuss it. I don't know how you feel.
I mean, they're not going to go 0-16 probably this year.
Yeah, so that's something, you know, moving up.
Yeah, they're like 1 in 31, I think, in the last 2 years. So they're getting better than that. And they got some okay guys on their team. Carlos Hyde, he left the 49ers to go to Cleveland. So that really bummed me out. So they have some interesting talent. So we'll have to see what they do in the draft. And I think now Hugh Jackson isn't going to get any passes, though. So he's a coach that, if they do poorly, could be on the hot seat. I hope they do well because, again, I think Hugh Jackson's a good guy. I think he's a good coach. But if they do poorly now with because of all these trades and the new general manager, more expectations, he's someone whose job could be on the line if the Browns have another poor season or a bad start.
Yeah.
Last team I want to mention really quick, Houston Texans signed Tyrann Mathieu, the safety from Arizona. He's a
baller. Oh, yeah.
So I think he's going to do really well in Houston. I think Houston could challenge Jacksonville for that AFC South championship that Jacksonville won last year. I think Houston's roster, again, top to bottom, is just as good. Jacksonville's probably a little bit better, but Houston has Deshaun Watson and Jacksonville has Blake Bortles. So I think the AFC South will actually be interesting, which for many years it hasn't been, especially because the Titans have Marcus Mariota. They're a really talented team. If Andrew Luck can get healthy, all four teams are going to be competitive at least. So that'll be an interesting division to look at. That's just the last thing I wanted to mention on NFL free agency really quick.
Okay, cool. Will the Colts be good enough with Andrew Luck? Like, do they have enough people that
I think even with work? Andrew Luck, they won't. I think the Colts are just really butchering that, like, or butchering Andrew Luck's chance of winning Super Bowl. Because they're one of those teams that, like, when Andrew Luck was on that rookie contract, they didn't do enough like the Eagles did with Carson Wentz to put themselves in win, or like the Seahawks did with Russell Wilson when he was on his rookie contract. So now that they're paying Andrew Luck so much money, they just can't figure out how to put a good team around him. So I think even with Andrew Luck, the Colts are going to finish fourth in that division. But Andrew Luck takes them from like a 13 team to like a 9-7 at least team. So
yeah, that's good. Well, we only got like, what, 5-6 more months?
5-6 more months. Yeah, I'm really excited. Really excited for football. So we're gonna take a quick break and then come back. There's about 10 games left in the NBA, so we're going to talk really quick about how the rest of the season is going to break down. So we'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Double Take with Matt and Jake. In the break, Duke lost, so Kansas is going to the Final Four. And I am depressed, but we persevere.
You'll get them next year. And by you, I don't mean Duke because they're going to have a whole other team. I'm not sure how they're going to do, but just generally.
Generally, Duke will hopefully be better. But officially, college basketball for me is over. So let's move on to the NBA. The Jazz had two tough losses to Atlanta in particular, which was a real bummer. But then the Spurs game in overtime, we went 3-1 against the Spurs this year, so I shouldn't complain too much. Donovan Mitchell hit some crazy shots at the end of that game.
Yes.
But so that leaves the Jazz in eighth place right now. They are half a game back of Minnesota for seventh, a game and a half back of San Antonio and New Orleans for the sixth and the fifth spot, and then 2.5 games back of the Thunder for the fourth spot. And they have exactly 9 games left.
Yeah. So, and I think that's, I don't think we'll catch the Thunder, but that's the right place to stop because we're not going to catch the Trailblazer. And I don't even think mathematically we could catch the Warriors or the Rockets. So that's kind of the mix. A couple of weeks ago, we had said that we thought the Jazz were going to finish in the seventh seed. Between then and now, we were in a four-way tie for the fifth seed, in which we were winning the tiebreaker. I don't know. The seventh seed, I still kind of think that that's where we're going to end up, the seven or the six. I'd be happy with either of those, so.
Well, the six would be magical because we would, instead of playing Golden State, we'd play Portland. So that'd be the dream, obviously, if we can get to the six. We have the six hardest remaining schedule left, and then some of the teams are ahead of us. Minnesota has the 30th hardest schedule remaining. The New Orleans Pelicans have the 11th hardest schedule, and San Antonio has 7th hardest schedule remaining. So. Yeah. San Antonio's right with us, but there's still everyone has an easier schedule with us. The Jazz have to play Golden State twice, Boston and Portland. They also play Minnesota and the Clippers, which will be huge games. We do get to play Sacramento one more time. Excuse me, Memphis one more time, and the Lakers twice. So we got some potential, but I think the six is the goal. I think eighth is a realistic possibility, though.
Oh yeah, we definitely could end up in eighth. I mean, it's possible to end up in ninth still. Like, I think we'll make the playoffs, but that's definitely a reality that's possible. Let me ask you this though: So typically, if you're a low seed, you want the sixth seed because then you go 3-2-1, you progress in terms of hardness. I'm almost wondering, though, like, if we do think that the Jazz have any potential to make a run in the playoffs, if you almost want the seventh seed, so you play the Warriors, which I know sounds absurd, but we know that Steph Curry's not going to be playing in the first round. We don't know what Kevin Durant is going to look like. He said a couple of days ago that if he was going to play now, they'd have to shoot him up, so that makes me think he'll be back. Klay Thompson's got a bum thumb. And so they're going to get better as the playoffs go on. Do you think there's an argument to be made for wanting to play the Warriors in the first round as opposed to the second?
I mean, to me, it's... that question is, do you want to lose to the Warriors in the first or the second round?
So do you think they'll have enough guys back where they'll still be able to beat us?
I don't see right. Even with if Curry does miss that first round, and I mean we could, but I mean we thought last year we'd give them at least a game, and they just wiped the floor with us, or they just killed us. Like, even though, and we had that game where we killed them by 30 points in January. Mm-hmm. I don't see the Jazz beating the Warriors in the playoffs, though. I think the Warriors are just kind of coasting at this point, and they're going to turn it on once the playoffs start.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, though, because, I mean, we were missing George Hill. Rudy Gobert, I know, is playing, but he had kind of a sore knee. So I think we're going to be a lot healthier, and we should actually be better, which is crazy to say that we would be better this year after losing Gordon Hayward. It just makes me happy to be able to say that.
It does make me happy. No, definitely. We're in a really good position for sure. If Rudy wouldn't have been hurt, we'd have a much better record. But right now, 41-32. I think realistically, if we get to the sixth seed, I'd just rather play Portland in the first round than Golden State. Do you think the Jazz have a chance to beat Golden State?
You know, it depends on health. Because, like, if Steph Curry's not going to be there, then that's huge. I think he creates and he makes a lot of opportunities for Klay. So that helps. And then, like we said, we're not sure how Klay's going to shoot the ball. Like, is it his thumb that he broke, or is it one of his fingers?
It's his thumb on his shooting hand. Yeah, is broken.
And so that's what I'm saying. Like, if Steph is missing and Klay's shot is off, then I think we have a real chance.
Yeah, I definitely rather play Golden State than Houston. So I definitely don't – like, we finish eighth, we might as well finish ninth at that point, to be honest. But I just would much rather play – I'd really rather play the Pelicans if I get a pick, or the Timberwolves. I don't think it's likely that I would play the Timberwolves.
I mean, I'd rather play the Suns if I got a pick.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if we played the Magic, that'd be swell. I think, like, out of the playoff teams, though, I do think I would obviously rather play Portland. But I think the Pelicans, if they can somehow get up to either 3 or 4 and we can move up to 5 or 6, that would be my ideal scenario. But I think the furthest the Jazz are going to go is the second round, because at that point you're playing either Golden State or Houston for sure. Yeah. I don't see us beating either of those teams.
Yeah. I don't know. If we played Golden State, we'd get to wear those cool nightlife shirts again. Those are fun. So there's that.
I do love the nightlife shirts.
Yeah. No, but I think you're right. I think if the Jazz got to pick realistically, they would pick the Trailblazers. So And I think, yeah, like, we're only one loss behind the Pelicans in the loss column, so that's definitely, you know, achievable. I mean, our schedule isn't that much harder. They play the Warriors, they play the Trailblazers, they play the Spurs.
Yeah, in our Warriors game, we have one coming up, like, today, actually, as tips off in about an hour. And then again, Steph Curry, Andre, and Klay Thompson out, so we could win the game today. So even though our strength schedule is hard, win percentage wise, because of the Warriors, they're not the full strength Warriors. At least for the first game, we're going to play them.
Yeah. Draymond is out today too.
Oh, so we're basically playing the Santa Cruz Warriors.
Basically, but remember last year when it was last year or a couple of years ago? I think it was last year though when we were playing the Clippers. And they had Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, and then like three other people. So like, oh, we'll win this one for sure. And then we lost it. So I don't want to get overconfident because this exact same thing just happened to us.
I do remember that game. Yeah, that Clippers game sucked. I kind of think that was 2 years ago because it like cost us a playoff shot and ended up costing us the playoffs.
Yes, yeah, it was 2 years ago. But I do think that the Jazz should win this game. I think they should be disappointed if they don't. I kind of think they need after going 22-2, you know, you're going to lose games. You're going to lose games to the Hawks. And I understand that the Hawks, you know, every once in a while you get a team that just matches up well with you, even though they're a worse team. And Atlanta seems to be like that for us. But I think this would be great to kind of minimize the Atlanta loss, you know, pick one up that we shouldn't necessarily win for losing one that we shouldn't have lost.
And the Boston game, they don't have obviously they don't have Hayward, but they don't have Kyrie Irving either. Yeah, so they're like Terry Rozier and Markieff Morris and Greg Monroe.
Yeah, that's so another game, right? Because we're supposed to be on ESPN, and this was supposed to be the big Hayward game.
Yeah, so I really wish Hayward would travel to that just to get booed in the stands. But the Boston game. Portland is the last game of the year. That's going to be huge, even if it doesn't, like, directly with us in Portland. I believe we're going to need to win that game for some reason to get some sort of tiebreaker or something like that. But yeah, I think the Portland last game and Minnesota are going to be the two biggest games in terms of, like, actual playoff races, like, direct in the game result.
Right, yeah.
We'll see. Who do you see coming out of the West at this point, last couple weeks of the season? Do you think it'll be Golden State, or do you think Houston has a shot?
You know, I'm sure that I'm going to change this or adjust this once I see the Warriors in the playoffs, but it's hard not to say the Rockets. Like, I know that, you know, the Warriors understand what it's like to go to the playoffs and to win in the playoffs, so they should be able to turn it on to a degree. But, I mean, they're just going to be hurt. They're all going to be coming off injuries. I don't think that any of their big four are going to be 100%. And it's just hard to maintain success for a really long time like they've been doing. I mean, and that's part of what makes Michael Jordan so great, is to be able to win all those years in a row. But the reason that I picked North Carolina losing in the second round is I just didn't think they could get to the finals 3 years in a row, not because I didn't think they had a good a team. I just think it's hard to go that far that often. Like, that's why Chile, I don't think, is going to the World Cup, is that they just had to go to so many tournaments year after year after year, and I just think that they were tired. So there's potential for that to happen with Golden State, you know, all the injuries, all of that. Houston is very, very hungry. Houston wants this. And that's not to say Golden State doesn't. But, you know, obviously, even if you don't want to, you grow a little bit complacent. So it's going to be a fun series, though.
Yeah, I still think it's kind of like picking against the Patriots and Tom Brady for me at this point. Like, it's just hard for me to intellectually do that. You know, I still think Golden State's going to win, even with all the injuries and the problems they're having. So that's something we disagree on. We'll have to see. What I really want to ask you is, last week we both picked the Raptors to come out of the East, and then Cleveland just beat them pretty bad. So the Raptors had 80 points at halftime, and then Cleveland came back, and they dropped 132 by the end of the game and beat the Raptors. The Raptors have, I think, lost like seven out of eight, to Cleveland in Toronto. Do you think this game means anything? Do you think Toronto can still beat them in the playoffs, or do you think they're not going to be able to get over that LeBron hump?
No, yeah, I mean, I think that this was actually a good sign for the Raptors, or as good of a sign as a loss can be. But if you look what Cleveland did when that happened, I mean, LeBron had to have, you know, I think it might have been, in terms of just scoring and points, the most points scored and assisted on of his career. So LeBron had to play a career game. Everybody on Cleveland had to shoot very well. I mean, this was the best we've seen Cleveland play in a long, long time. It was in Cleveland. Toronto was coming off a back-to-back, and then Cleveland barely beat them. So the fact that Cleveland barely beat them when everything had to go right and it had to be at home and the back-to-back, I think the Raptors look at that and they can just say, look, we're going to have home court advantage and we're not going to be coming off a back-to-back. So I think that the Raptors should be encouraged by that.
Yeah, so the Raptors, they played three out of 4 days. That was their third game in 4 days. And Cleveland, to your point, shot 68% from three, or like 64% from three.
Yeah.
Which isn't going to happen every game. So you're going Toronto-Houston finals?
Yes.
I'm going Golden State. I want to pick Toronto. I mean, it is hard to pick against LeBron, but I think I'm going to.
He's made us look foolish before.
He has, and LeBron in the playoffs is probably the most amazing thing in sports to watch.
It's so fun to watch playoff LeBron. I love it.
So I might have to go, even though I want to pick the Raptors and I think they'll win, I might have to pick Cleveland Golden State right now.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be interesting. Yeah, so next week we'll track that, see how the – because I believe April 12th is the last day of the playoffs, the last day of the NBA regular season. So we'll catch up on that. Also, our mock draft for 2.0 is coming out for the NFL. So we'll check that out post-free agency. And also, Major League Baseball is starting Thursday. So we're not going to talk a whole lot about baseball. But we are going to try to get a little preview in of the season. Talk about if we think Houston's going to repeat. We'll spend a few minutes on that. But that's what we have to look forward to next week. Also, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, MJ Double Take. My personal Twitter handle is JacobCowden28. Matt's is MattCowden24. Matt's an avid tweeter, so feel free to check out all his hot takes on Twitter. Yeah. And Instagram, for that matter. Just all over social media, you are.
Posting all of the time. Hey, real quick, though, shout out to both the Real Monarchs and Utah Royals. Utah Royals went to Orlando for their first game in their history. Went out with a tie, should have had a win, but Orlando got a penalty on a really bad handball call. I mean, you watch the replay, clearly hits Becky Sauerbrunn's face. But to be able to get a point on the road, that's what you want, first ever game. So congrats to them. And then Real Monarchs winning their first game of the season, scoring two goals in the last few minutes to get that win. So Monarchs looking to have another great season as well.
Yeah, so the Monarchs are like Real Salt Lake's, for simpler terms, D2 team, or like minor league team. And the Royals are Utah's women's soccer team that this is their first year. So a lot of soccer going on in Utah. And the Utah, or the Major League Rugby, or National Rugby League, or something out of it, a new rugby league for the whole country just got announced. And its headquarters are in Salt Lake City. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, so the Utah Warriors, I think, are one of the teams, but the other teams are in, like, Austin and Seattle had teams in San Diego. New York is going to have a team next year. So it's a professional rugby league all over the country. The headquarters are in Salt Lake City, Utah. So,
dope. Cool.
A lot of stuff going on in Utah right now.
Love me some Utah.
Yeah, so thank you all for listening, Matt. Any final arguments, closing remarks?
No, that was my soccer thing. That was kind of my thing. So, read some Tolkien today. You're probably not going to listen to this on March 25th, but you should read some Tolkien anyway.
All right, we'll read some tokens. Yeah, thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week.